Hey, so thanks for joining me, Sean, on Sass on the Street. You're joining from a funky, noisy cafe in Wellington, and we've got no visuals because Wellington is challenging. So we were just talking. I thought I'd flick.
But we have
what?
We have 5G here. Haven't you heard? We have 5G in Wellington now.
You have 5G? How are you still alive if you've got 5G?
I think we're in agreement that it didn't cause COVID, but I'm sure it reduced my immunity somehow.
I just know that it's killing one side of all the trees.
That's right.
Evidence. I've seen the evidence. So we were just having this chat and I flicked the record button because you're saying something interesting about the kind of the corporate technology estate, and you've worked a lot in large corporate environments, whether it's government or private sector. And what fascinates me is this idea of what kind of old technology is. And I just had this vision because everything in New Zealand seems quite kind of up to date and pretty cool when you go to use it, compared to say being in the UK. You got younger, more agile companies here. Even the big corporates like in New Zealand seem pretty funky when you're using the technology. They have technology so that you check your own bags in. How cool is that, you know?
Exactly.
But tell us about like how recent do people need to be keeping up with their own technology investment at a corporate level?
Well, so you're absolutely right. And there are some New Zealand companies that are doing some really leading edge technology things. But from a legacy technology standpoint, it used to be if the tech was old, like if the hardware was depreciated or the software licenses were end of support or nearing end of life or end of support, that was how we judged legacy. I really think that we need to move that forward from the technology perspective, that legacy needs to be the way we operate technology and use technology. And so legacy approaches in an organizational level, both in the corporate and the public sector, are if your thinking is that IT is that group of guys that sit down in the basement, we only approach them when we need to buy something or something's broken. That's a legacy way of treating technology and how you do it, and it's not a modern. If you're instead embedding your technology with your business so that the business can have the benefit of learning from technology and how they move forward and how they get better outcomes using the technology, and the technology can see where the business is going and can make suggestions, that's the new way of looking at technology. And I think those are the major differences between legacy and non-legacy. Time frame wise, but everything's moving to SaaS. Everything's moving to as a service, right? So if you have on-premise assets that you are depreciating, and you haven't updated those since 2016, then the question has to be, am I getting the value out of what I've purchased, or am I just appreciating it because it's a capitalized asset and I'll just look at it later on when I need to replace it because it's no longer supported anymore? And I think that's a very legacy way of looking at it, instead looking at technology as how do I invest in the technology to get the outcomes that I'm looking to get. Does that make sense?
Totally. Like, what? Totally. Like, it does, because what fascinates me is that 2016 is just kind of a rough marker in your head, but it just it just feels so recent that it's like it must be a massive amount of people, massive amount of corporations and organizations at the bigger end of the market that are not doing that. And I just want to give you some context. When I present back in 2007, I was presenting a board portal system that was as a service. And of course, we're coming up against IT teams that go, they'll go, oh no, well, we could do that. And then the company secretary of, you know, some of the biggest companies in the world is saying, well, do I listen to my IT team who's saying we can build it? Or do I take this thing that looks really good that everyone's using, at least in America they were at the time, and they go, should I take this software as a service idea? And then the IT team are going, well, we got to pay how much for that system? Like 30,000 a year for that, just for the board? Like, well, that sounds kind of expensive. And then you go, well, if you want to put two guys on it permanently to keep up with all the, this is pre-iPad, to keep up with a new tablet that Apple released, you've got to build an app for, and you've got to keep all the security up to date, and you've got to support all the directors, and you've got to keep up with governance and compliance. You want to have two IT guys do that full time and never take a break and always have your best experts on it because the board are looking at this stuff. So it's sort of this, so I've been in that world, but it's really interesting to hear you talk about it like as a service is the way forward. Because the other thing that we used to get was some guy would say, well, show us the security architecture. Show us how this whole thing works. You know, I'm open to it. And we'd lay it all out. And I'm really new to the whole thing in 2007. And there's a top security guy from, like, we did one for one of the biggest security firms in the world that make all the passports and the SIM cards, Gemalto. They make a lot of, they actually manufacture money.
Yeah.
And he was just like, yep, fine. After like 10 minutes of me showing him the security thing. And people would say things like, we just want our whole IT estate to work like that. And it was just, mind blowing, because you feel like you're the young kid on the block showing the bigger enterprises, well, this is that dinky solution. And they just go, that is so brilliant.
Yeah. Well, and so you hit it on the head, because we also, so I was talking about the business approach to technology, but there's also a problem within the technology community, and that's they don't take a total cost of ownership approach to stuff. So why would I go get Kubernetes from Amazon or Azure? I've got developers. We'll just roll our own Kubernetes from scratch and build and support our own Kubernetes environment. That sounds like a good idea. And we can do that cheaper in-house. Only you're right. You got to put 2-3 people on it full time. The cost for those people, plus the maintenance and the security and governance, it's going to be massively expensive, and you won't get any scale in what you're doing. So the technology, the people on the technology side need to stop. Everybody's not snowflakes. And a lot of the technology people say, no, our business is a snowflake. We're the only ones that can build stuff for our business, because you can't go buy something off the shelf that meets our requirements because we're a snowflake. We need to move past that. For most services, off the shelf as a service offerings can meet 90% of the requirements, and that should be good enough for most of the things. And trying to build something in-house, you're never going to get to 80-90% of the requirements anyway. So, I mean, I think there's a little bit of disconnect between the technology and the business side that they need to come together and move forward. And I think a lot of that has to do with language. The business is using different languages than the technology is using to talk about these same things. So the business says, we want these outcomes. We'd like to get these outcomes, whatever they are. And the technology here is, these are hard requirements. We have to do everything that they say is an outcome. And so technology comes back and says, it's going to be $2 million for us to build something, and it's going to take us 2 years. And then the business goes, well, we can go buy it off the shelf, and it only meets 70-80% of what we want. And technology goes, but we were going to give you everything. And complete disconnect in the communicating past each other.
Yeah, and there's also this whole growing up where the as a service hasn't been created. So what yeah. do you do? You know, like you've got to actually get the job done, so you've got to build it as a corporation, right?
Yeah. I have some serious heartburn, especially around the service provider side of, so I've worked on the service provider side, and I've sat in sales meetings where the sales guys were saying, yeah, we can do this and this and this as a service. And we walked out of the room and I looked at the sales guy and said, yeah, we haven't built that yet. And they said, well, we'll get this customer to pay for it and then we'll build it. And I was like, no, the customer's not buying this from us. They want to rent the service from us as a service.
Yeah.
You wouldn't ask an apartment owner to start paying monthly rent for their apartment before the apartment building was built. And the sales guys said, yeah, but that's how we work. We have customers pay for the initial development of the, and I'm like, no, this is an as a service offering. We need to invest to build the offering and then take it to the customer. The model from the service provider is it has to flip a little bit. And I like to use Hootsuite as an example. Hootsuite built their platform and began giving it away for free so that they could get feedback on it before they started charging anybody for it. They didn't go to IBM or to, you know, Bank of America or something and say, hey, can you guys give us $1 million so we can develop this platform? Then we can turn around and start renting out to people. They invested and built the platform first and then took it as a service to the market.
Yeah. And you're absolutely right, because the deal is you're paying a fraction of the cost, but you're paying it ongoingly. And that's why you're getting it, you know, that's why you're doing it as a service, because if you.
Yeah. Well, it's, you know, and I had a discussion with a CIO, and he's like, yeah, this is a whole new way of working. We've never done this before. And I went, really? This is the AT&T model. So AT&T built and strung all of the wires for telephone service in the United States before they started charging people. So you didn't get charged for your phone service until there was a phone line dropped into your house.
Right.
You might get charged for the phone line to run from the pole outside your house to your house, and that's fair enough. But you didn't get charged for the phone line to be delivered to the pole outside your house until you had a phone sitting in your
right. And so
67 years ago.
Yeah, it's interesting. So calling is a service. And then 5G is a service. We're just going to get some extra charges.
Yeah. And the iPhone, that's the entire iPhone model, right? You buy the next iPhone so that you can get access to the new features on the iPhone, but they're constantly rolling out software updates. So iOS 14 comes out, I think in a month, and there's a whole bunch of new haptic and visual integration capability, but you haven't had to buy a new phone. You're just getting it as a software update. Windows 10, new versions of Windows 10 come out every month and or every 3 months, and there's new capability within the Windows 10. I mean, my Apple Watch is going to start tracking to see if I wash my hands every time correctly.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many different business models running through Apple, though, isn't there? Because
they put it
on the App Store. I still haven't quite got my head around the purchase. Because I was in the digital television industry for a long time.
Yeah.
And the key blocker is the set-top box, because when you talked about legacy, that's real legacy. They just want that thing for 20 years. And it doesn't break, and you don't want anything else except maybe give us more money for a hard drive.
And it's completely proprietary to the television broadcaster. I'm using broadcaster as a digital broadcaster, but broadcasting company.
Digital platform. So, and when we were building applications that would run on that set-top box, they had to work with every box that had been out for 5 years. Had some shitty Amstrad box with, like, you know, 128k of memory, and then you had some Pace, you know, thing with, you know, 500 500 gigs or whatever. It wasn't that much, but it all had to behave. So it was pulling everything down to the lowest common denominator.
Yeah.
And after being in that field for a while, I was just like, this thing is just going nowhere. So I got out in 2005. And when you think about what I have people in my life who complain about Apple religiously, and they complain about the componentry with the plugs that don't work with other ones. They complain about the fact that old stuff doesn't work. But right. To come right back to your point about since 2016, if in a corporate estate, if you're not keeping up, you're off the pace by a long way. I really am just coming around to this idea that the strength of Apple is that they just have a fast moving ecosystem.
Yes.
2 to 3 years, and they just, because they're ruthless, and it takes a while to get your head around it if you don't like spending money on technology, but when you get with the program, you go, oh no, I've got the, if I just stay in this little 2 to 3 year bubble, everything works together so brilliantly. And then every time I hear complaints, it's people who are outside of that bubble.
That's right.
Either outside of that bubble in the Apple world, or they're outside of that bubble in the, my iPhone is bleeping. they're outside of the Apple bubble altogether, and they're pissed off. This stuff is not interacting with them.
That's right. Well, and you know, I knew executives back in the 90s that did this with Mercedes-Benz. So they would lease a Mercedes-Benz, and every 2 years they would take it in and get a new lease, and they would get the new Mercedes-Benz, and their monthly costs never changed, and they got new features and new capability, and if something didn't work, it was a problem outside of Mercedes-Benz because they were constantly getting a new. So this is, it's not a new model, and for technology, for companies that have forward-facing modern technology, even 20 years ago, we were on a depreciation cycle that said every 5 years we were replacing all of the hardware within our on-premise. So it's just the time frames have compressed, right? And the capability uplift that we want is driving us towards a SaaS product because we can't replace the hardware fast enough to support those outcomes that we're driving for. But the SaaS products and AWS releases 1,000 new products every year.
So let's talk cloud for a moment. So where are a lot of the New Zealand corporates and governments kind of minds at with the cloud right now? Is it and vendors and what are the trends?
It's a good question. I think that some of the public sector is still trying to get their head wrapped around. They have a cloud-first strategy. And by the way, most of them have had Office 365 licenses for 2 to 3 years. Whether or not they've been using them or not, they haven't. Some of the agencies are intentionally doing a multi-cloud strategy. So they're doing some SaaS products, some AWS products, and some Microsoft Azure products. The private sector, it really surprised me, but the private sector is actually looking at Alibaba Cloud now. You're getting the cloud market. I wrote a post a while back about this idea that the wholesalers for public cloud are also the retailers for most of public cloud. So you don't have any differentiation. If you want to buy public cloud, you don't go to, you don't necessarily go to Spark or Vodafone to buy AWS or Azure Cloud. You go direct to Microsoft or AWS. Now, I know that you can go to Spark and Vodafone, and they do on service, and they do MSP for it, and they provide added value for the use of cloud. But you can call up, even a public agency can call up AWS directly and get an account on AWS and just buy it directly from AWS. But I think they've got their heads in the sand a little bit because they really do have a multi-cloud implementation. If they don't have a multi-cloud strategy, that means that their strategy doesn't align with what they're doing because they are in multi-cloud.
Right.
So I mean, I had a discussion with a public agency who said, yeah, we're doing 100% AWS. And I went, oh, okay, great. So you're using AWS's Office products and AWS's Active Directory products and that stuff. And they went, no, we're using Azure AD and we're using Office 365. And I went, well, then you're not everything in AWS. You're using SaaS products on Microsoft Azure. And they went, oh, maybe we are doing multi-clouds. So yeah,
Well, they really mean the cloud that we're thinking about.
Yeah.
The cloud we're not thinking about is all over.
That's right. We're talking about the IAAS cloud. We're not talking about, and you know, one of the quasi-government agencies said, no, we want to move to cloud, but we're not doing any cloud today. And I said, but you told me you're using Salesforce. Oh yeah, we're using Salesforce.
Yeah.
I went, well, you don't have an on-premise Salesforce implementation. Nobody does. So that's on the cloud. And they went, oh, that's what you mean by cloud.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
That's what I mean by cloud.
Yeah, it's fascinating, isn't it? Because I did some work with a company that was helping a lot of small businesses kind of gather up all their data and make sense of it and build metrics. And the realization, because you get in these conversations like, we only want to work with customers that have the following: Salesforce, Xero, blah, 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 blah. And it doesn't take too long to scratch that kind of rationale and actually ask people what they're using to realize that no two organizations have an identical technology stack.
Yes.
That's at the small to medium-sized business level. At the corporate level, even more.
Oh,
right? Yeah. There is no identical, we're just like them. Right? It's just you and I, you know, have we got the same nutritional content?
Yeah, exactly.
Of course not.
Yeah. Well, it's hilarious when I go into large enterprise organizations and, you know, the HR department is using, you know, PeopleSoft, but then you go out to the teams and the actual business units are using Microsoft Excel to do all their people management. And I was like, but you have PeopleSoft. You could do, or there was one government agency I went in that had 16 different flavors of databases.
Right.
And I mean, I remember talking with the head of IT and he's like, the business units just keep buying different and new databases and not using what we have. And I said, well, how much of your operational budget is going into having people that can support 16 different types of database? And he said, a lot. So, yeah.
But the crazy thing is, we're having this conversation and you go, you've got probably the most valuable contribution to any organization where you can just go in there and just kind of add so much value. And then you've finished a contract and you're waiting for, you know, the next opportunity, but you're in a market where you kind of have to pitch yourself or sell yourself or, you know, go and kind of hit people up for coffees. I mean, it's just so crazy.
That
every estate is in such a mess. You can sort it out, you know.
My wife has this running joke that I only get invited into organizations that are in a mess. Because if the organization is working well, they don't need consultants. you're absolutely right. I mean, it is a little bit of a challenge, and the challenge I think is that the business owners that are hiring don't completely understand or don't that they're not getting the advice and guidance to understand what it is that they're trying to get out of technology, and so. Someone like myself who can come in and help them understand that that barrier to get to them to understand that they can see value out of it. You're right, it's coffee. I've got to do coffee catch-ups. This is not I can call up a recruiter and the recruiter will have a job role that just that they're trying to fill. And oftentimes what I get happened is I get put into a solution architecture or an enterprise architecture role. And then within the company, they suddenly realized, oh, there's all this other value we can get out of Sean. And the last 2 years I've been at police, I've been doing innovation consulting about all these various technologies, but also showing them how they can fundamentally change the way that they're implementing technology to get better value out of it quicker. And that's not even a role description. I mean, there's nothing that you can aim at.
Exactly. I mean, one of the things that comes to mind as well is the when you've got your head inside the problems space, you have seen recurring problems that you would go, well, I know that that could be fixed with a software as a service solution, and you know, yeah. 9 out of 10 companies that I've been with would probably use it, and they'd probably pay quite a lot of money for that, and it probably wouldn't be like this amount to pay to actually build it and deliver it. It's a really specific pain point.
Yeah, exactly. And they may not have even identified their pain points yet. They know they're in pain. And the interesting thing is the pain point that often brings me in is our entire infrastructure is going end of life. Sean, help us. Our entire infrastructure is going end of life. What do we do now? And then I get in and find out, I mean, your problem is your business processes aren't aligned to the technology. So you're actually doing things harder on the business side because you're not leveraging the technology because you haven't picked the right technology. When what they asked me to come in and do is just do a lift and shift replacement of their technology, and what they need to do is transform the way that they do their business. And but you know, they don't even realize that they need to transform the way they do their business because they're looking at, oh, our stuff's coming into life. That's their only pain point. So yeah, it is a little bit of a challenge.
But do you think someone could build a SaaS business around some of the problem areas that you know inside out?
Oh, absolutely. No, absolutely. In fact, two or three of the companies that I've been in, I've proposed this idea of a SaaS platform. But again, it comes back to that thing, right? Most companies within New Zealand are looking for a customer to pay for the development costs to build the thing.
Right.
Getting into the companies to be able to pitch the idea, you need the company that's willing to build the service. They have to have those contacts to be able to go in and pitch that idea, because a lot of the businesses don't even realize the pain they're in until someone comes in and, you know, lays everything out. For the very first time, they see, oh, we have a roadmap. Oh, our roadmap shows that we're not doing, you know, X, Y, Z the way we should be doing it. Oh, we need the business to transform to be able to accommodate that. And a SaaS product is going to accelerate that and allow us to do it in months instead of decades. So, yeah.
Awesome.
I have pitched that several times.
You what?
I have pitched that idea to several companies that I've worked for. Right. And again, it's every time the barrier has been, well, we've got to go find a customer that's willing to pay for it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, something will pop.
Oh, I'm sure it will. I appreciate you doing the call with me today, Simon.
Yeah, no, it was good. I'll look. Thanks a lot for the chat on SaaS on the Street, John. And we look forward to further news from the streets of Wellington.
Yeah, absolutely.